Good morning, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. Time for Spectrum West on this Thursday. As we say goodbye to October 2013, happy Halloween, by the way. We're going to today share a conversation we had with country singer-songwriter Phil Vassar. With a string of hits and hit albums to his credit and bigger than ever, he's bringing one of his last shows of the year to the State Theater in Eau Claire next Friday, November 8th. Jim Oliver's here with the Christmas Cookies, a musical group encompassing four music teachers. They're playing at Fannie Hill next weekend. Harvey Hall is a building, not an individual, but it's named after an individual, a dignitary within UW Stout's past. And after nearly 100 years, it's getting a major facelift. We'll talk with the dean of the College of Arts, Humanities and Social Sciences, and an archivist on the Menominee campus. And while we're on the theme of state college campuses, if it's true that you're looking for something holiday special for those relatives or friends who just recently or long ago abandoned the roller coaster weather of the Midwest for someplace else, only to hear them lament over their sudden or perpetual lack of great Wisconsin cheese and things that naturally accompany that savory sensation, once again this holiday season, the people in a certain department at the University of Wisconsin River Falls have the perfect gifts to send and placate their despondency. Here's my conversation with Michelle Farner. She's the Dairy Pilot Plant Manager at UW River Falls. The College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences is the umbrella under which you sit there, yes?
Yes.
Okay. And that's 101 years old. Man, that's a long time.
The university as a whole was established in 1874.
Right.
But, yes, the College of Ag.
Is this one of the premier colleges of that kind in America?
This is the third largest dairy science program that we have here in the country.
Ah,
so I would say it's very premier.
Here's something, and I don't know whether this is going on or not. I'm wondering if everybody's happy with the number of young people choosing this kind of education. Is it dwindling, or are kids coming back?
I think kids are coming back. What I see kids coming through this program, especially working in the dairy plant, is they're getting experience to go back to their family farm. So you have a lot of students that are coming here, gaining the education to be able to make their family farms successful,
mm-hmm.
to withstand the future.
Yeah, and you know what? It's not fair for those of us who are sitting on the outside looking in. But most of us, we have our fingers crossed that family farms are going to make it and have a resurgence, because that's part of our fabric.
Absolutely, especially in the dairy state.
So are young people talking about that then?
They are. They're actually coming to me asking me to help them with coming up with value-added products, and they want to learn the art of cheese making. They want to learn how they can gain the extra value from their milk at their family farm.
Yeah, when my kids were young and growing up, I used to take them to a friend's farm, and we'd bale hay with them, and you know, that kind of stuff. I don't want that stuff to go away.
Absolutely not.
We talked about a rodeo up at UW River Falls a while back. All that stuff, it seems so fresh to me in a world of glitz and smoke and mirrors. It's basic stuff, isn't it?
It's very cool.
Yeah.
It's very cool to be part of the culture here that participates in such great programs.
Do you get young people from all over coming to River Falls to do this?
We do, all over the state. And we have people from Brazil. We have people from China. I had an intern from Brazil this last summer, and she was with me for 8 weeks and helped me quite a bit with creating different cheeses and different cheese spreads.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's back in Brazil. When she started with me, she wanted to work with a brewery, but by the end of her internship, she was thinking that maybe she could go work for the dairy that's in her hometown.
Yeah.
So it's pretty neat to have some influence on students.
Yeah, I've heard people in Brazil do support their breweries.
They do. They do.
Well, I can hear some stuff going on in the background. For our radio listeners, for our theater of the mind, describe the physical plant of where it is you guys do what you do.
Well, we are in the food science building on campus.
Mm-hmm.
We're behind the gymnasium, and we're attached to the animal science building. But we have a space that is dedicated to our dairy pilot plant, and then right next to us we have our meat pilot plant. So not only do students have an opportunity to learn more about dairy products and processing, but they also have an opportunity to learn about meat and meat processing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very unique operation. Only two universities in the state system for Wisconsin offer this type of educational platform. Mm-hmm. But we're making cheese today, so I have four students that are with me today learning how to make cheese and make those warm, luscious cheese curds.
Oh, boy. See?
Are you drooling yet?
It's getting close to lunchtime. Thanks for that, Michelle.
Sure.
On the phone with us today is Michelle Farner. She is Dairy Pilot Plant Manager at the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences, UW River Falls. Making cheese has been around a long time. How has technology affected what you guys do?
Here at the pilot plants, we actually use an open vat. So a lot of the cheese plants have gone towards automation.
Mm-hmm.
And we are still making cheese the old-fashioned, handcrafted way of bending over a vat and doing a lot of the labor by hand instead of having an automated cheese vat or an enclosed cheese vat
mm-hmm.
do a lot of the work for us. Our technology here has not changed in 30 years. We're actually going to be looking to renovate our dairy plant in the next 2 years so that we can update our technology but yet keep some of the original equipment that we have here that we can make our handcrafted cheese as well.
Earlier in our conversation, I mentioned my sentiment, and it's the sentiment of a lot of people in Wisconsin about keeping family farms up and running. The small little cheese factories, too, are one of those things that when you're traveling around, there's still a lot of those, aren't there?
A lot of them are popping up on family farms, so they're becoming more farmstead artisanal operations versus just having a smaller co-op.
Now, you're talking about students making cheese. Obviously, a dairy plant has to be maintained and cleaned. Do the students have to do that stuff, too?
Absolutely. In fact, I have five students that are scheduled to come in this afternoon to do the sanitation after we clean.
So they get their boots on and the hose in their hand? And
they absolutely do.
Cool.
Yes, they learn everything from HACCP, sanitation, production, quality, packaging, marketing. They learn it all.
Well, our topic specifically today is about Falcon Foods and the gift boxes that you have coming up, especially for the holidays. It's been a long holiday tradition up there, hasn't it?
It has been a long holiday tradition. And this, fortunately, is the first year that we're able to offer our gift boxes online.
Oh, so how do we get it? Now we go online. What's the address?
The easiest way is to get there from our UWRF, www.uwrf.edu will get you to the main page. And then from there, you can get there two different ways. You can do a search in the upper right-hand corner and put in Falcon Foods, or you will be able to find us www.uwrf.edu/ANFS/Falcon Foods. There's going to be an online order button, and that'll take you to our marketplace. Look through all of our gift boxes for this holiday season. And several of them, I believe eight of them, include our summer sausage that is made here on campus.
Oh, man, you make that too.
We do.
That's great.
You have a little taste of River Falls right in a box.
Way to go. Michelle Farner, keep up the great work in River Falls. A little early, but happy holidays, and thanks for providing us with such great gifts.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, happy holiday. It could be happy Halloween, so that applies. Again, it's www.uwrf.edu, and they have the main page, and you can search Falcon Foods there, or go to www.uwrf.edu/AN, as in Nancy, F as in Frank, S/Falcon Foods. Or, now you have some of your holiday shopping done. Good for you. Wow. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. We appreciate you being with us. This week, as retailers are already ringing up holiday sales, Jim Oliver turns his and our attention to some things Christmas with this week's Oliver Account.
The musical group Christmas Cookies will perform November 9th and 10th at Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. Joining us to talk about what is billed as a musical review that takes a slightly cross-eyed and lighthearted look at the coming Yuletide is Warren Hermanson, who wrote the music and the lyrics for the group. Thanks so much for coming to be with us today. Starting with yourself, tell us who's in the group and tell us their backgrounds.
Very good, and thank you for allowing me to come on your program. I taught over at South Middle School for most of my career, and these fellows that are in the group are music teachers from the public school system here. Two of them are retired. Bill Simon is a retired band man, and he was at South with me, good buddy of mine. George Utpal, a lot of people would know, gifted keyboard, besides being a good singer and all, was the Memorial High School choir director for many, many years. And the only one who's still making an honest living is over at DeLong, that's Steve Wells. He's still teaching there, and he's our lead guitarist. I sing high tenor, and I play guitar, and Steve Wells is our second tenor, the lead singer, and he plays the lead guitar, Bill Simon on bass, and Utpal on keyboard. So we have four-part harmony, and we have four instruments.
So how long have you been doing this?
In the late 70s, I used to write tunes to entertain the teachers during Christmas time, and I would give a one-line note of music and the words and give these to Utpal and Simon. And from there, they took over, and we would do these songs to entertain at Christmas time. So there's about one-third of the program, I suspect, that goes back all the way to the early 80s, maybe. Along the way, I decided the best thing to do would be to put this down in the form of regular score. So we have piano music now and four-part harmony all written out. But as I like to say, the music is by me and the arrangement is by committee, because these guys are just tremendously talented and they take over and do a fantastic job. It's really fun to do this.
Mm-hmm. Now, you, I know you've performed in Chippewa Falls. Do you perform around the region, or do you go far beyond the region, or where do you do?
No, we're going to do two shows here, thanks to Don. We're going to do two shows in Fannie Hill. That's it for Eau Claire. We're going to be up for one date in at the Heidi Center in Chippewa. And that's the only time we'll be doing that. Everybody's so busy that to take it on the road and do much more than that is more than we can bite off right at the moment. That could change.
I was just going to say, when everybody is retired, would that be a time to start branching out?
It's a great time to start.
Well, share some of the music that we can expect.
Sure. Well, the one I think that everybody recognizes, or most people recognize, is called "Get Your Reindeer Off My Roof, You Silly Fat Man."
Get those reindeer off my roof, you silly fat man. There's no telling what those animals might do. Well, your reindeer total weight and your sleigh is overweight. So get off of there before you tumble through. From tearing up my shingles, I want you gone before the laughing stops. Well, the folks ain't used to sights such as yours and Putnamites, so get off of there before I call the cops. So get off of there before I call the cops.
If you don't recognize it, then, well, there are a number of other people that I'm sure don't recognize it too. A Memorial High School choir did that many years ago. That was the first time. And the Eau Claire Male Chorus has done it numerous times. And there have been other groups in town as well. So that's kind of the signature song. What I like to do is take liberties, have some fun with the traditions of Christmas. So most of the time what you're hearing are songs about Santa, songs about dysfunctional family activities and shopping, that sort of thing. And I'm not going to take any liberties with the Christmas story. This is just strictly the traditions that people have built up over the years. And that's fodder enough right there.
You know, I think about humorous parodies of Christmas music or music in general, I guess. I think of Jorgi Jorgensen and another guy named Jimmy Jensen from Minnesota, who was a singing, swinging Swede, but they always did it in Scandinavian dialect. Do you do any dialect kind
well,
of stuff?
Well, I'm being an old Norwegian. I certainly could, but I try not to. I actually grew up very close to Fargo. If you've seen the movie, you know what type of an accent we have.
Oh, boy, yeah. Is there some more conventional music in the show?
Yeah, what we
original stuff.
We have two songs that we have we've arranged to do that everybody will recognize. I'll Be Home for Christmas and Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. We do those just interspersed in the show just for a little downtime, you might say, from the usual shtick that we've been doing.
Sure. How long does the show run?
About an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes, something like that. If you throw in a nice break, which we plan to do, intermission, you can expect to spend a little less than 2 hours there.
He is Warren Hermanson, who wrote the music and the lyrics for the group Christmas Cookies, who will be performing next weekend at the Fannie Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. Well, since we have the Fannie Hill Dinner Theater on the docket here, and since Warren unfortunately came along with Don Hodgins,
I have remained quiet. I have remained. I haven't said a thing here.
Yeah, I'm really impressed, and I really appreciate that too. But anyway, I think it's probably in order to ask about what's coming up next after the Christmas cookies at Fannie Hill.
Well, you know, it is the holidays at Fannie Hill, and it wouldn't be Christmas without a visit from my pal Rudy.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this year's Christmas show at Fannie Hill is Carol of a Christmas. Rudy, he's lost his holiday mojo. Through a series of events, he gets visited by the ghost of sitcom's past to help him find that missing mojo. The show is broken up into about three or four scenes, and we get visited by some of the well-known television programs of the past to try to help Rudy along and get him back on the track to a happy and merry holiday season.
Now, I've never asked you this before because it never occurred to me before, but is there any change in the menu for the Christmas show?
Oh, yeah, you're talking about our food out at Fannie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We actually, every show has a different menu. Yeah, we change our menu up almost every show.
You nailed down the next season. Yeah.
We're working on it. Oh. We're working on it right now. As a matter of fact, I just got off the phone with George Thomas. He's bringing back his Elvis show. That'll be our first offering of 2014. Mm-hmm. We're in negotiation to do Lombardi. Mm-hmm. I've got a cute little show called Beer for Breakfast, about four guys that get together for a guy's weekend. Everybody shows up except one of them, and all of a sudden his wife shows up instead. I read this a couple of months ago, and I thought, my God, this is great. This is a great show. So we're, you know, it's not well known yet. As a matter of fact, I'm dealing directly with the author as far as rights and everything to do it at Fannie Hill. So new script, a lot of fun. I think it's going to be a real interesting time with that one. During the summer, we're going to be doing what I call the church basement ladies number two, the second coming. The fall is still a little bit vague. We're not sure yet. A lot of this stuff is we have to apply for the rights and see if there's other theaters doing it in the area. And there's what I like to call the Mickey Mouse of the business, you know, with the publishers and everything. So we're not quite sure about that. The Christmas show right now, we're looking at a show called Every Christmas Story Ever Told. And I guess that says it all. We got three guys on stage and we touch on every little, from the Grinch to Christmas Carol. They're all in there. So it's a fun season. I'm really excited about 2014. And I'm excited about this Christmas season, too, starting out with the Christmas Cookies. I've listened to their discs and seen these guys talk to them, and I think it's just going to be a great kickoff for the holiday season.
Their somewhat offbeat version of holiday music will be presented November 9th and 10th at Fannie Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. For ticket information, you can go to www.fanniehill.com. Warren Hermanson and Don Hodgins, thank you both for coming in to be with us today.
Happy holidays.
The same. Thank you.
And thank you, Jim. A visit to UW Stout and Country star Phil Vassar coming up on Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering full real estate services from listing to selling properties. Current listings, mortgage calculator, and other information is online at wisconsinrealty.org. Support also comes from Weld, Riley, Prenn, and Ritchie Law Firm in Eau Claire, offering a defense team of attorneys to protect your rights in criminal, OWI, and other defense matters. More information online at wrpr.com. And from Festival Foods, dedicated to making grocery shopping easier for all shoppers with the introduction of pink, yellow, and green boomerang buy tags throughout the store. Festival Foods, a Wisconsin-grown company.
Spectrum Memo, the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra, appears Saturday evening at First Lutheran Church in Eau Claire with a program titled More Requests, music by Handel, Mozart, and Haydn. Frederick Arts presents the Pro Art String Quartet from UW-Madison Monday evening, November 4th at 7 o'clock at the Frederick Area 6 to 12 School Performance Center. And that is in Frederick, Wisconsin. That is a free event. We'll have more memos coming up. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you along. It's Halloween today. The feel and atmosphere of historic Harvey Hall on the campus of UW-Stout is something I guess one can imagine from looking at photographs. But that feel and atmosphere is much more appreciated while standing in its cavernous, reverberating halls, face-to-face with one of Cal Peters' murals. So I treated myself to a trip to Menominee to meet with a couple people intensely involved in the overhaul, archivist Heather Stecklein and Maria Alm, Dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences, who's getting relocated while things change and yet stay the same. We met within what was the president's office, now vacant. We pulled up a couple straggling chairs and a wooden box and began with Heather explaining the daily life of an archivist.
I wear a lot of hats. I manage the papers of the university going back to the 1890s, but I also manage the papers of Dunn, Barron, and Pepin County, their official county records. I'm an agent of the Wisconsin Historical Society. So people who want to do research on court cases from the 1800s come to my facility to look at them. And so on a typical day, I may see some people doing family history. I may see people who are interested in the general history of the area. So in addition to these court cases, we have other official records like birth records, marriage records, but also we have things like the Ludington Guard Band papers. And so collections from local organizations, businesses, and families are also there. So we have people interested in local history or regional history coming into the archives. But we also have a lot of students coming in to do projects to learn about the university, and we also have a lot of corporate-related requests. So when people are working on Harvey Hall, for instance, they'll want to see the original blueprints because they'll want to know what they're going to hit when they're digging. Or they'll want to know what used to be there. And so we have all of the original correspondence related to Harvey Hall from the original architects and from the administration and everything that goes back and forth.
So what you're saying is, thankfully, there is a lot of stuff to use as a resource as you go forward with the renovation.
Absolutely. And we'll be collecting all of the stuff from this renovation as well. In fact, we have a class coming through the hall documenting what it looked like before everything was gutted out. And so I'm really excited that they thought to do that. And it's something people will be relying on years from now.
And let's describe the room that we're in. I mean, I saw it on a PowerPoint presentation. This was the president's office. Is it going to be the president's office again after renovation? Or what's the future of this particular room?
No, it's not going to be the president's office any longer. It actually was serving most recently as my office, as the office for the dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences. But the building committee and I determined that because it's such a lovely and very large space, that it would be better suited to be a public space, so it will be a conference room.
And that's the voice of Maria Alm. The College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences, we can probably imagine two out of the three, but what's located within humanities in an education?
Oh, well, English and Philosophy Department, largely. Those are our main programs. But we have a program that's Professional Communication and Emerging Media. And one of the concentrations in that major is digital humanities. And it's the digital humanities students that are very actively involved in working on the Harvey Hall Centennial Project, because what they hope to create is a kind of virtual museum. They'll curate a lot of the what we're calling artifacts that will become part of this virtual space that people will be able to visit so they can see what Harvey Hall looked like 100 years ago, or what it looked like in the 70s, or what it's going to look like in 2016.
As you mentioned, you have lots of students working on this project, the Centennial Project. Tell me about the importance of students feeling the heritage of where it is they're attending school.
I think that one of the things that's so interesting is that Stout has remained true to its mission over the last 100 years. When the Stout Institute began, and I think Heather can speak to this as well, it was very much hands-on applied learning. It was the manual training school. And today, Stout still prides itself on being a hands-on applied learning institution. And so the students are learning about their history, and they're learning how it's brought them to the present and how it can take them into the future. So an example I like to give is that there used to be, for example, book printing in this building. And the students can study how we've gone from book writing and printing to now writing and publishing on the web as part of, as I said, the Digital Humanities program. That's just one example. But it's important for our students who are studying history. We have a history concentration as well. It's important, as Heather mentioned, for our students who are studying construction, because they're seeing this project through from beginning to end, for our students studying art and many, many, many other areas. So they're having this opportunity to not just learn the history, but also to take what they're learning in their own areas and apply it to the current project, and then to see the results of their research, because some of it's already been published on the web.
And yes, exactly as Maria said, the beauty of this project is that the students are using their own skill sets and their own voices. And so much of history is a dialogue and a reinterpretation of events. And so what we're seeing is things like, we had students design the logo for this project. And what they did is they investigated the blueprints in the archives. They investigated handwriting samples in the archives. They investigated kites. They investigated all sorts of imagery and writing and pieces of history that have never been seen by a lot of students, and they meld those together using their own voice to interpret it. And so the beauty of this is that we really are creating a hands-on project for students to interpret history in areas that you would never think of as historical disciplines. Instead of writing history narrative, we're seeing interpretations of history that are really unique to our campus.
There's almost an irony in the fact that Stout is so well known for its technological prowess, and here we are talking about things that are 100 years old, and there are students that are interested in that. I would have to say Stout is a wonderful mix of yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Absolutely, and that's the beauty of this project, is that it's going to take all of these voices and compile them into something that a current person can communicate with and can experience. It's not just words on a page. It's going to be exploring. And so I really see the interface as something similar to what LucasArts used to do with video games, where it would be playing Monkey Island or Day of the Tentacle. You come into a room and you see an item that you can interact with. And so you might be walking through this virtual Harvey Hall and you see the doorway to the exhibit room. You click on the doorway and suddenly you see a gallery of paintings that have hung there. You click on the painting and you might hear an oral history from a Stout alumnus who had a connection with that painting. And so it really is a way of absorbing this information in a way that we haven't done before.
I have to see the Cal Peters stuff. Tell me a little bit about Cal Peters, and pretty influential in this particular building.
He is, and Cal Peters was a WPA artist, a Works Progress Administration artist, and so he was funded by the federal government to paint within this building and on this campus. And what our campus supplied him was the space to work in and the art supplies. And so he painted a series of murals that hung in this building. One still remains over the main entrance to the building. It actually depicts a scene, a very idyllic scene of an industry and kind of a Greek god and goddess, along with contemporary figures from the 30s.
So was there no information about what he was envisioning when he painted these? Because I was interested in noting that some students actually noticed similarities between some people in that mural and some teachers of old.
The papers that remain in the archives are very vague about what his intentions were as he was painting, or what his methodology was. He was not a prolific painter. He painted in a few other places, but he isn't someone like Grant Wood or Diego Rivera, who people have studied and who left extensive notes. And so we don't know exactly whether he painted local figures or whether he was just thinking of a blonde woman in his head when he was painting. But we do have students theorizing that blonde woman in the painting looks an awful lot like a Stout professor.
Let's talk a little bit about the theater, because I'm curious as to its presence in this building, which at one time was a home economics building, I understand. There's also a theater in it.
Yeah, well, Heather may even know more than I do about the origins of the theater, but the theater was originally called the Auditorium. And it originally was much larger than it currently is, because there were two balconies instead of just one before the renovation. The theater has already been renovated. And I think the reason for the auditorium was that in the early years, while there were concerts there, of course, band concerts and theater performances, there also were graduation ceremonies held there and other activities and events in the community, because it would have been one of the largest theater spaces in town, in addition to the Mabel Tainter.
And now it's back to being state of the art.
Yes, exactly. The acoustic systems have been preserved and are rehabilitated. And also, that's something we should mention, is there was originally a Cal Peters mural above the auditorium stage, and it's covered right now. We don't know what it looked like. We have we have descriptions of what it looked like, but we don't have any photographs of it. It's really frustrating as an archivist, because that's one of the first questions I get is, do we have a picture of this mural? And it turns out there are a lot of pictures of people on stage, but not a lot of pictures of people tilting the camera up above the stage to look at the painting.
We're talking with Heather Steckline, archivist, and Maria Alm, dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences. And we are on the campus of UW-Stout. So who decides what gets remodeled and what gets renovated?
Well, Heather and I are both new here. We've each been here a year. And so those decisions were made before we both came to campus. But I think that the campus makes a plan. The campus has a plan as to which buildings require renovation. They take that plan to the University of Wisconsin system. And then between the University of Wisconsin system, the legislature, and the building commission, decisions are made as to which building gets renovated in what order. Harvey Hall will be 100 years old in the year 2016, and it has not had a major renovation, I believe, in all those 100. It's had some minor renovations, but if you look even at the heating and cooling systems, the electrical systems, you don't need to walk around the building very long before you can see that it's really in need of modern renovation.
And it's going to be a wholesale facelift, and yet we will recognize it.
Yes, and actually people from 80 years ago will recognize it in ways that our current people haven't been able to see. So the restoration component of the architectural project will be to restore a lot of the community spaces that would have been the gathering places in the building. We will be working to restore the original terrazzo flooring. We'll be working to restore at least the character of the glasswork and of the paint color on the wall will actually be completely replicated. We found what the original color was. We'll also be working to open up spaces that have been closed during some of the earlier renovations from the 70s. So we had a large tea room where people would go for snacks, and now it's currently faculty offices. And so we'll be opening that back up and reusing it as the space it originally was.
Okay, so the timeline is what? When will this be completed? And secondly, will students be involved in whatever celebration there is when this is reopened, and will they feel ownership, even those who are here now but won't be here then?
The students will definitely be involved in the celebrations that we are planning. We're just starting to plan them now, but they've been involved from the very beginning with the research and even with some of the input into the building plans. Students were surveyed before the committee finished its work on the building. The timeline, faculty have already moved out. The classrooms will be moving out in December. January, we hope to begin demolishing the building, the interior, and we hope to be back in summer of 2015.
And the interesting thing, Heather, about this kind of project is that as much information as you have filed away, archived of its 100-year past, you are beginning anew with a brand-new building and archiving whatever's going on now, correct?
Absolutely, and that's the piece of the archives profession that people don't always think about, is that in addition to preserving the past, we are very actively collecting the present. And so we have a real tendency to think, okay, it's from 1950, therefore it's historical. But in reality, things from 2010 and forward are also historical. And if we don't take the initiative to collect the current voices, there'll be a bit of a dark age for that era. And so part of my job is to be very active in interacting with student organizations, student leaders, and also faculty in collecting their papers and their voices. And so as part of this project, every time that I have a class that I know is affiliated with this project, I ask them to give me the final results of their project so that they can build upon each other and they're not reinventing the wheel each time a new class comes in, but also so that we can see the different ways that people have approached this particular topic. You can approach a building in a million different ways, and we're starting to see hundreds, if not thousands, already.
So being here relatively new, is this kind of making you dizzy that you're involved in something this large at this time?
Yeah, I think we're both very excited about it.
Well, I thank you for being with us here on Spectrum West. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was fun at UW-Stout. We hope to be there when Harvey Hall reopens.
Support for WPR comes from the Girl Scouts of the Northwestern Great Lakes, dedicated to providing a foundation for lifelong leadership skills through innovative programming for girls grades K through 12. More at gsnwgl.org. and from Simply Done in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space, home of Dunn County Pottery featuring wood-fired pottery in a local and fair trade gallery. Details at simply-dunn.com.
Country star Phil Vassar on his career, piano playing, and philosophy is coming up next. Here's a Spectrum memo. The Cable Hayward Area Arts Council sponsoring an evening of dance the way they used to at the Stone Lake Lions Hall Saturday night, beginning at 7:30. Music and dance calling by the always entertaining Duck for the Oyster. The Eau Claire Children's Theater presents Blues Clues Live, the most spectacular place, this Friday and Saturday, plus next Friday through Sunday at the Oxford. In Eau Claire, their website is info@ecct.org. The Wyman Series at UW River Falls presents the Zagreb Saxophone Quartet, a Croatian chamber ensemble. Next Tuesday, November 5th at 7:30 p.m. in Abbott Concert Hall of the Kleinpel Fine Arts Building.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. McDonald Central Catholic High School of Chippewa Falls will present a dinner theater production of I Do, I Do, Friday through Sunday. The show is a fundraiser for lighting and sound equipment for the high school auditorium. The director is Nancy Scobie. The musical director is Jerry Way. Community Arts of Fall Creek will present Robin Hood Friday through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. White Christmas will play Fridays and Saturdays at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The show runs through December 1st. The theater department at the University of Wisconsin River Falls production of Chicago runs through Saturday at the University's Blanche Davis Theater in the Kleinpel Fine Arts Center. Barefoot in the Park plays through Sunday at Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. And auditions for Our Town by Thornton Wilder will be held from 6 to 9 p.m. Monday and Wednesday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. A couple more Spectrum memos. Saturday evening at 7:30, it's the Home Free Vocal Band, a cappella at its best, at the Mabel Tainter. In Menominee, tickets at 235-0001. The Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra returns to the Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum in Spooner next Saturday the 9th. Complimentary wine, hors d'oeuvres, and museum tours begin at 6, and the symphony strikes their first notes at 7. The website is wisconsincanoeheritagemuseum.org. Well, you wouldn't call me a country fan, although I am a fan of some artists who are pigeonholed as country musicians. When I heard that Phil Vassar was coming to the State Theater in Eau Claire, I knew I might have an opportunity to get to know and maybe like yet another. So I listened to his tunage, which dates back 8 albums and several years, and not that it matters much, but I do like it. I found his songwriting to be notable, meaning I take note when people write lyrics that matter, not just rhyme. And I found him to be an absolute musician's musician. He's a piano guy, and I reached him at his home in Nashville for a bit more acquaintance making, and let's join in where he was talking about touring and schedules and taking time to smell the coffee.
You know, this is my favorite time of year, too, man. First, about November.
Yeah.
I always thought the October blues, man, you're just so beat up from all your traveling and flying and this and that. But by November, man, the holidays come around and you start to... You know, you start seeing everybody and it's slowing down and your schedule lightens up.
Good.
You can actually, you know, be a human being again. It's great.
Yeah. Phil Vassar, the piano man. So are you closer to being, what, the Elton John, the Billy Joel, or the Little Richard of country music?
Holy smoke, man. I don't know. I think probably a little bit of all of them. Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder and all of them. Ronnie Millsap, all of them. You know, I always loved, you know, piano players. And I mean, when I saw Jerry Lee Lewis, though, light his piano on fire and stuff like that, I was like, dude, that guy's awesome. That guy's cool. Who does that? I've learned from some of the best, that's for sure.
Did you pick up the piano early?
You know what? I didn't. I did not. I mean, I was a jock. I kind of played football, ran track and all that stuff in college. And in high school, during two-a-day football practices, one of my distant cousins or something was storing a piano in my mom and dad's basement.
Huh.
So I would go down there and doodle on it. I mean, it wasn't a great, it was just an old upright, beat up upright piano, but, you know, some of the keys worked and or didn't work, but it was cool. You know? Mm-hmm. So I went down there and started doodling around on it. And then I said, man, this is awesome. And then I heard, you know, Lionel Richie do Easy Like Sunday Morning.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, all right, I'm hooked. That's it. I'm hooked.
You haven't done it all by ear, have you?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I've never taken a lesson or anything like that. You know what? You just get good at it. I mean, I don't know. And how do you learn how to do the hurdles? You know, you just practice it. I guess. How do you learn how to build a cabinet or something like that? I guess you just practice and practice, and you make a lot of bad cabinets until you make a good one, you know?
So you just love the piano so much that you put in the time.
I did. I mean, I play 7 nights a week in Nashville and doing clubs and whatever. You know, I just did it because I love it. And plus, I needed to make a living. Mm-hmm. I needed to eat and stuff like that.
That's big, yeah.
So, yeah, you know, so it's I learned how to do all these things just out of necessity, really. But I love the piano. It's like everybody else played guitar, you know, in Nashville especially. I always considered myself a piano man in a guitar town. It's cool how it's worked out. And, I mean, if I look back at it, you know, of course, I'm not much for looking back and seeing what you've done, but I go, man, you know, you worked hard, you did this, and you just put your head down, and you sort of keep going and keep going. When people tell you your songs are bad, you just keep on writing them. And, you know, and you can't believe everything they say because these people aren't very smart, you know? Especially, you know, executives and record labels. I mean, these guys don't know a good song from a bad song. They really don't half the time, really, even more than half the time.
You can say that now that you have your own label, huh?
Well, I can. You know, I just think it's, you know, the thing that always got me was like, you know, I've had all these hits. Eventually I had all these big, big hits, number one song. I don't need a label or an executive telling me what's a good song and a bad song. I'm like, look, you're an accountant.
Yeah.
Go balance the checkbook, man. Let me figure out the music, and you just go do your thing, you know?
That's pretty fresh. I like hearing that. Speaking of natures of the beasts nowadays, you know, I have to admit something to you. I don't follow the country scene as closely as others do, but I do get the country feel in the lyrics and maybe the melodies that you write. But, you know, for you and what I've been able to listen to since we scheduled this, the instrumentation feels very cool to me. It feels, the word I came up with is it feels occupied, like every nook and every cranny has a sound in it. It's pretty rich. It's very full. My curiosity says then, all right, Phil, how do you choose which instruments are included in each song? Do you envision that stuff during the writing process? Is that the producer, or how do you fill those nooks and crannies?
Well, it's just, I've always produced all my records.
Okay.
Always have, you know, and I just think for me, I record everything at my house. I have my own studio, which makes it a lot easier. There's trial and error. You experiment and do things like that. And I think back in the old days when they used to sit around for a week and, you know, when Steely Dan took, you know, a week to mix an ending for a song or whoever, you know, I think everybody really, really tried to get it right. In the days of now, of, you know, getting in a studio and, you know, you only got a certain amount of time and you're paying $2,000 for the day. I mean, it's just expensive. Of course, now it's changing so much. It's metamorphosized into this home studio mentality too again, which is really, really cool. But I think that's cool because I can do that here and, you know, try this or, you know, let's try the mandolin or something. Let's try a trumpet or whatever the heck it is. And then you just listen to it for a little bit and you go, you know, that's just terrible. You go, I like this. This is great, you know, and kind of like what the Beatles did, you know, George Martin. You know, I love that where you can just sit around all day and you don't have to worry about a clock and worry about, you know, paying somebody or getting somebody in and out. I just like to do records like that. And then, you know, it gives you more time to really focus on, you know, trying to make a good record. And of course, you know, whether that matters to anybody or not, it matters to me, you know.
Well, I think it does. I think people hear that. Speaking of the Beatles, John Lennon hung himself upside down from his feet playing the guitar to see if it sounded different.
Yeah, I don't have anything like that going on. But it's really fun because being a keyboard player and, you know, you get all these different, you know, keyboards or instruments. And, you know, I just like to keep things as organic as you possibly can, though. You know, it's just, especially in Nashville when you have these great, great, great players, you know, you could just get them over to the house, pick them over for, you know, a couple hours and noodle around on a couple things. And just, because these guys are so good.
Yeah.
You know, you just point them forward and they take off. So it's really a lot of fun to see what comes up.
I see you have a greatest hits CD. Is that the point at which an artist knows they've made it, when they have enough for a greatest hits album?
Well, you know, my goal is to have 2 greatest hits albums. You know, I think if you do that, that's when you know. You know, you've had, but it's, you know, I guess it is. You know, whenever that came out, and I said, man, you know, I've been pretty lucky and I've had a ton of hits. You know, and I guess that's a pretty good thing. You know, but it's just a, you know, greatest hits albums sometimes are like, well, this is all I've done. I'm like, no way, man. I'm still going. You know, they're gonna do another one.
So good for you. Yeah, good for you. Come next spring, I see that you have one of those milestone birthdays coming up. It's
It's,
on that particular birthday, professional golfers usually transition to another tour. And I'm wondering, right, if you know, turning 50, does music bear any resemblance to golf, or are you more similar to a fine wine?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, I just look at things like, look, and I'm still here, you know, rocking along. Paul McCartney, I just saw the other night, he's 72, 71.
No kidding.
You know, Tony Bennett, yeah. Tom Jones. You know, I just look at some of these guys, Elton John, Billy Joel, are still, Bruce Springsteen, 62 years old. Have you seen this guy? I mean, you know, whatever, man. Age is just a number, man. I mean, and that's what always bothered me about label. You know, they're like, well, how old is he? How old is she?
Yeah.
Who cares? I have absolutely no idea what difference it makes. You know, it's like, you know, what do you look like? What is, you know, Adele or whoever.
Yeah.
Who cares what you look like or how old you are or whatever? Is the music good or not? I mean, if people worry about the wrong thing. Yeah. That's why we got a bunch of good-looking people doing bad music. You know what I mean?
You got a nice perspective on stuff there. By the way, I did my own armchair focus group. I texted my two daughters, who are 11 years apart, and I told them I was interviewing Phil Vassar, and they said, awesome. I love his music. You're still there. You're still in the groove.
Well, you know, you gotta focus on, you know, what's good and what's not good, and, you know, you gotta try to keep the kids coming to your shows. You know, I don't want to have a show that just, you know, lays there, and I've never been that artist, man. I've always been, I jump and do flips off my piano still. You know, today I can't do that. I'll figure something else out.
I was listening to excerpts from your Live on Broadway album. I saw that within the historical average for late December, Nashville temperatures are in the mid to upper 40s. How was the New Year's Eve weather when that thing was recorded?
You know what? It was in the 60s. It was really, really great. I mean, it was a little rainy, but it still was, you know, very comfortable out there. You know, Nashville, I mean, it's 82 degrees here today. We're lucky to live here. I like this place.
Good for you. Yeah. Hey, and by the way, thanks for the Christmas album. That'll come in handy again soon.
Awesome.
What's next for you? What are you working on?
We always write, we record, then we tour. So I'm in the writing phase. I mean, I just got off the road this week. I've got about 6 more shows this year. On some weekends, and you know, I'm doing, of course, you know, Wisconsin and, you know, a couple other places, but that's it, you know. And I'm excited just to be a songwriter again, that phase. And, you know, it's always it's exciting to get back in a room and start writing songs again. You know, you sit down, you drink your coffee, and you just go at it, man. You just sit at a piano and you write stuff down. It's really fun.
Is it as satisfying to have, you know, someone else get a hit from something you've written as it is to have, you know, you doing the singing?
Well, I love it. I mean, I tell you, and as things go on, I mean, I think you just love, you know, you love having people record your song, especially, you know, as many people as there are writing songs and good songs, really, really good songs. You know, you just feel lucky that somebody would actually cut your song and put it on the radio.
True.
It's a pretty cool thing, man. It really, really is.
You
never get sick of that. Never get sick of it.
Good deal. You talked about touring and dates. Have you ever played Poughkeepsie?
I have played Poughkeepsie several times. I've actually
done
a master's class at Vassar before. I taught you know, it's cool to go into some of these universities. Matter of fact, I was just at my alma mater doing that, James Madison. And you go into the class and you talk to these students and they ask you all these great questions. And I think I end up learning more from them. I really do think I end up learning more. I think I get more out of it than they do, actually.
I can see where that would happen. Hey, I'm going to play something. Give me a song you'd like me to play.
Well, I don't know. Love is Alive. You know, it's always the newest one you're happiest with. You know, the newest video, the newest song.
Tell me what it's about.
It's what the funny part about Love is Alive is I kind of wrote it with a drum groove, and I wrote it almost like a rap, which is kind of funny, you know. And, you know, we're always trying to get home. We're always missing the people we love, you know, my kids, my daughters. And you know, so you're always wanting to get home, and you're just so excited about that. And love is so... I mean, it's just about how powerful love itself is. You know, Love is Alive came out of that, and I just love the way this song feels and the instrumentation. You know, as we talked earlier on it, really, really like that. Anyway, it's on the new record that'll be out this coming year.
Phil Vassar, thanks for talking with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and safe travels. Have fun during the holidays. Enjoy your time off. Well, keep what you're doing.
Man, I can't wait to get to Wisconsin. We're gonna have some fun. I'm excited.
Thanks, Phil.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate that.
100 miles till I get home, and I can't wait to get you alone and hold you close as I can get. You think you've been loved, you haven't been yet. Feel your hair across my skin, it takes me somewhere I've never been. Girl, I love you, you love me. Carved it on the willow tree and love. Mama likes me.
X's cross on my tattoo reminds him of when he was younger. Starving girl with this hunger I can't ever satisfy. It's burning me up deep inside and I can't get enough of this. I need a long forever kiss. Side of me where I thought no one could ever be. Can't wait a minute longer. Can you feel it getting stronger? Love is alive.
He's a great singer, exceptional songwriter, and a good guy. You can tell when you talk to him. I guess if you want to hear more, you can. Phil Vassar, a week from Friday, November 8th at the State Theater in Eau Claire, 7:30. One of only a few shows he has left to perform this year. Tickets at eauclairearts.com and by phone at 832-ARTS. The opening act, by the way, is Familiar Looking Strangers. Cool group from Liverpool. Wow. Don't forget the 7th Annual Harvest of Harmony show by Red Cedar Sounds, Colors of Harmony Saturday. Two shows, a matinee at 2 p.m. and 5:15 show at the Colfax High School Gymnasium. Tickets at the door. And UW Eau Claire and Eau Claire Jazz, Inc. present the Big Band Extravaganza 2013. That's at 2 p.m. Sunday in the Ojibwe Ballroom of Davies Center. Tickets at the UWEC Service Center. Well, big thanks going out to Tiffany Coggins for your usual colorful energy and assistance in promoting our weekly audio assembly. And thank you guys out there for taking part in meeting with our guests this week. Next week, we're going to delve into the art and soul of social work. And we're going to uncover a lot more interesting stuff for next week's first November show. More from those engaged in and bringing us the arts, the music, and the culture of Western Wisconsin. Again, for the Thursday listeners, happy Halloween. For Friday listeners, I hope it was fun. And you guys have a great weekend. I'm Al Ross. We'll see you again next Thursday and Friday evening.